As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
New name, same game, same people. So nobody turn it off, nobody turn away, tune away, whatever that is. This is Pucks in 7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. We're back at it for another week. Follow us on Twitter at Victoria Matiash and at Ryan Payton 75. Vic, of course, does some great work for one of the major news outlets in Toronto, ESPN Fantasy as well. We'll get into her fantasy take later on. I was on the air this past weekend with Dennis Bernstein, Dave Pagnotta. First time in studio, Vic, in four years with them, 2.5 for me.
It was looking like you had a good time, yeah, for sure. And we should mention, we're only on Twitter until Twitter craters for once and for all, right? Because yeah. That's, and then,
when's
I don't know,
that gonna happen?
Mastodon, here
oh
we come.
Gosh, yeah. Which is what? Yeah. Funny, you texted that to me the other day, and I love, what's that?
If Twitter doesn't survive, there will be a replacement for Twitter, yeah. And we will be on that. But we for will. Now, we're still on,
yeah,
Twitter,
still on Twitter
in its skeletal form.
Changes. Social media. Also, on so many different platforms, ever get your podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, Google, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts as well. So we're available out there for you. We're going to get into the week that was, look at the week to come. We'll drop the clink hammer, of course, and Vic's fantasy stuff later on. But the Hockey Hall of Fame weekend, always fun. Two things about it. Number one, you honor the greats that we're in hockey, not just NHL, but Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the National Hockey Hall
of Fame. It is the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're much better at that in the last 20 years, right, than we have been historically.
Yeah, we can take the whole podcast with this.
Oh boy.
One day. Always nice to see those being honored for what they did in the game. And the debate always is, too, who should be in that, isn't it? I sometimes think that's almost more of a discussion point than who actually is going in. But the players going in, the Sedin twins in Vancouver. Enough said. I'll talk a bit about them in a minute. You can too. Roberto Luongo as well. Daniel Alfredsson. Swedish, I guess. Heavy, if you will.
About half this year,
Hall,
yeah,
of Fame. And they all had different roles in their teams. The Sedins and Roberto together in Vancouver. Daniel Henrik played all the time with Vancouver. I always thought, too, when they came in, I remember the draft day. Remember the draft, and they look, they're twins, right? So they get up, and two twins playing in the same team. And I thought, okay, if one leaves at some point, the other will follow.
It never happened. It
never happened.
Well, and they predetermined that wasn't going to happen. And the way that Brian Burke, who was running the Vancouver Canucks at the time, and what he actually had to do to pull that off, yeah, is quite incredible. Actually, a plug, I've never met Brian Burke, but you should read his book, yeah, Burke's Law.
Great book.
It is fantastic. Yeah. And he goes into details how he got the Sedins and all the perspiration and sweat, blood, and tears that had to go into making that happen in the first place. It's quite fascinating.
They were amazing. They were mainstays in Vancouver. Not just two. I think the Hall of Fame recognizes this. And I think what they need to do is not only the stats and numbers you put on the ice, but what you do for the game, what you do for the city.
They were great ambassadors, for sure.
What you do for that position. And Roberto Luongo, one of the better goalies that I've seen. I said this on the weekend. I said for some goalie who's coming in, a lot of goalies are tall these days. A lot more taller ones, I think, than
the big guys. Yeah,
they're bigger. He was able to find a way to win, and he was able to
move. Is he a Panther or a Canuck to you?
He's a Canuck to me.
Me too.
He's a Canuck to me.
Some people will argue.
I know,
because,
and you know what? For about an eighth of a second, I had to think about that, but no, he's a Canuck to me.
I agree with you. Daniel Alfredsson, is he a Senator or a Red Wing?
Yes. Hold on. Wait. No, Ottawa. I'll go Ottawa.
What is it? 16 years versus a season?
Yeah. Whatever it was.
I think I'll take him as a Senator as well.
Alfie was great for Ottawa.
He was the face of that franchise.
Yeah, he was.
He was enduring.
Is it fair to say that he really put Ottawa on the map?
He helped.
Helped.
Definitely.
Okay. So some before him, some after him, but he's a Sen all in all. I remember the one, he was a bit of a pest too. He was. He could get under your skin. Remember that moment when Matt Sundin threw the stick
and then he imitated the stick
right. after it broke?
But I want more of that. Yeah. And he had a little bit of that. And you could tell he has the personality.
Right.
And so I'm very much looking forward to his speech as well.
It's intriguing too. You look at how close these individuals came to getting a Stanley Cup. They never won a Stanley Cup,
but they came close.
Four great talents, very close. Alfie, three wins in 2007. They lost to Anaheim. The Luongo and the Sedins came within one game in 2011. They lost to Boston. So they were so close. And that's one of the things too. I won't belabor this too much because you want to talk about somebody else going in.
There are two other people who are also worth mentioning for sure.
But even if you don't win the Stanley Cup, to me, if you put up numbers like they did, you are just ambassadors for the game and you will be remembered for all time. You deserve to get in the
100%. I just wonder, are there any other classes full of NHL players where there hasn't been a single cup winner? I'm going to look that up. Right. We should have probably looked that up before bringing it up right on the air. But, you know, we'll have a look later.
Yeah, those four join a group of 24. So now there's 28 players in the hall that fell short of winning the Stanley Cup. 28.
Only.
28.
Right.
So winning the cup's pretty big, I guess.
Anyway. It is. It is. And in other sports, they say it, if you haven't won a Super Bowl, you've never really made it, right? But in the builder's category, this is, you know, incredibly overdue. Herb Carnegie. Yep. And it would have been nice. He was born in 1919. He was a big builder in the game. He created the Future Aces Hockey School. He was an incredible player himself. Obviously never got to play. I shouldn't say obviously because we should have been smarter back in the time then, but wasn't able because of rampant racism, was not invited in the league. There was some discussion with the New York Rangers at one point. There's a famous story and he still went on and he still did great things in the game that did not love him back as much as it should have. And there's a famous story with Conn Smythe, who was a builder of the game as well, but even a man of his time, was one of the nastier individuals around. And he actually allegedly publicly offered somebody $10,000 to make him white so he could play in the game.
And
that's what he dealt with. And he still stuck with the sport for decades after that, helped other players. And it's really neat now that his granddaughter is one part of the ownership group of the Toronto Six. So there's a neat full circle thing happening
and
there.
And Carnegie said that shattered him.
How could it not?
Because it was his boyhood team. He grew up watching it would shatter anybody. But in the Hall of Fame blurb too about those going in, that was I think in the top paragraph, that story about what he went through.
It's an indication of the time. And that was not an isolated incident, as anybody knows the history of the game or the history of us as a society. Yeah. We're better now. We still have a long ways to go in terms of inclusion of people from all walks of life and people of color and all the rest of it. Yeah. But he dealt with it in a far harsher manner. Still played pro hockey in the Quebec League. So it was quite fascinating. He should have went into the Hockey Hall of Fame 25, 30 years ago when he would have been around to appreciate it. But I suppose better late than never, and his family is here to appreciate it.
Yeah, so, the better late than never thing is that
it bugs me too.
It does. It's not just in hockey. It's other sports and like the Negro Leagues finally getting acknowledged in baseball, all that type of stuff. A quick question. Do you know what his nickname was? Carnegie?
Herb Carnegie? No.
Swivel Hips.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's a little sensual, eh? There's something else to it.
Go get Herb.
Good on you, Herb.
Very well deserving.
And then, of course, we have Riikka Salonen, the first female to come from European-born and playing over there. A lot of people don't know much about her. Let's just say she played for decades, essentially, since she was a little kid. She played pro hockey over there. She started with boys. She finally started playing in the professional women's leagues. But the famous part about her is she retired. She started a family. Mm-hmm. She had two kids. She was out of the game for a decade. And then in 2013, she came back. She wanted to come back. She talked to her trainer. And her trainer said, "You can do it." And she said, "I don't know." And her trainer thought in his head, "I don't think she can." But he didn't say that. He convinced her to try, even though he didn't think she would make it. She came back, won a bronze medal at age 44 for Finland, representing
44.
And she continued to play after that.
Amazing.
And so her story is phenomenal. I'm glad we're learning a little bit more about it. And we wouldn't if she wasn't going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So that's, again, the first female European to be applauded for sure. And she's not going to be at the ceremony because she's a committed physical therapist who works with people who are very sick and disabled. And she just thought with all the different illnesses and viruses traveling around, she did not want to take the risk with traveling. And so again, selfless, sacrificial. It's too bad that she's not going to have the party around her, but we're still going to celebrate her.
Some of the numbers too, 11 seasons in the Elite League in Finland, five-time champion. And listen to these numbers, 135 games that she played in the 11 seasons over in the Elite League, 201 goals, 395
points. She was next level.
2.92 points per game average. And in one season, she was at 6.14 points per game. I mean, and you know what
it's
I
next like, level. Yeah.
And you know what I love about this is that when it comes to women's hockey, you know this especially, it's come a long, long way. And for somebody in Finland who watched her play all those years ago, because, you know, it was Canada, U.S., and it still is always them battling for the gold, and it's tiresome. It is. It's fun to watch, but to me, it's tiresome.
It's limiting.
It's limiting. And there's these other teams that are trying to get closer to them, but they're not quite there yet. But they're much further ahead now than they were years ago. My point is, some little girl in Finland, looking at this story right now,
they have a role model.
My goodness.
They have a role model, and they didn't have one 25 years ago.
Came back, and off you went. So good on them. Yeah, it's going to be a great night. Always is, and the NHL does such a great job. It was a really speaking nights, Vic, and your thoughts on this too, because it was one of those. There's certain moments in sports in life that get you, and this was a moment that nobody will ever forget. And this was one of those moments that was not a dry eye in the building or anybody watching on TV. It was on Friday. Saturday was one thing.
We're talking about Scotiabank Center.
Boris Salming.
Right.
So it was one thing on Saturday when he came out, dropped the puck. But the Friday night to me was the one that got it. So Pittsburgh against Toronto. For those that haven't seen it, please do. But just on one part of the camera, some of the Leaf greats, Landy McDonald, Matt Sundin, Daryl Sittler, and Boris Salming. Boris dealing with ALS. Which is, I mean, all these diseases are awful, but this is just crippling.
This one feels particularly vicious. Yeah. ALS is Lou Gehrig's disease, amongst, to say colloquially. Well, it shuts your complete neural system down.
Right.
And you can still think about things, but your body doesn't respond. And already he's on a feeding tube and he can't speak now. So, and you can see it. It's physically, he's overwrought.
And Daryl, his name was being announced. Boria's name was being announced. And Daryl took his left hand and grabbed Boria's right hand and raised it up. And then Boria cried and Daryl cried and they hugged. And it literally, it took a lot out of me. It really did. Because I thought, here's this. And then the video they played on Saturday I'm not saying in memory of him, he's not gone, but a lot of the things he did in his career.
It was very much a goodbye, though.
Yes,
we did say goodbye to Salming over this weekend, for sure.
I forgot how much of a warrior he was. And you talk about women trying to make waves in hockey. Europeans back then trying to make waves in hockey.
He wasn't treated very nicely at all.
Not at all.
And he was cut a very tough cloth. He was a special player. I mean, we both grew up in the Greater Toronto area, and we're of a similar vintage as well. So, I mean, I think both of you and I really started to appreciate the Leafs during that era of Rick Vive and Boris Salming.
Yeah.
And he was a special guy in my household. My family is an immigrant family. My father came from overseas, first generation Canadian. And to watch for him, even though he's not from Sweden, he's from Ukraine, but to see somebody else come over and they're from away. They're not from here.
Mm-hmm.
And to accomplish what he accomplished with his many years with the Maple Leafs, he was a special player in our house. He wasn't necessarily our favorite player individually, but he was the guy. So to watch on Saturday night, I know Friday night was amazing as well, but the tribute video and then watching those guys get emotional. I mean, you just have to keep the Kleenex nearby.
Yep.
It's tough, man. It's tough. And it's tough to see what's happening to him now. He's only 71 years old. He should be in his champagne years with his wife, having a wonderful retirement. He still looks like $1 million.
He does.
He
kept himself in great shape.
He was a new
shape.
Painting subject just like a few years ago.
I know. Yeah.
Anyway. And he's been in incredible shape. He was an incredible player. He was tough. He skated like the wind. And it's sad to see, but it is nice that we actually got to say goodbye. I don't think he's going to be around much longer, unfortunately, but we did. We all got, he got the goodbye. We got the goodbye to a very, very special player.
It was amazing. No words could describe what we saw, but certainly they found the right words.
Even talking about it now, I'm getting a little verklempt, as they say.
Yeah, we're gonna remember him for a long time, and not just him, but the whole ceremony and just everything like that. Speaking of remembering for a long time, how long do you think the Buffalo Sabres fans at home will remember what Jack Eichel did?
So we're now going to fast forward to present day players, right. And Jack Eichel, who is a
That segue wasn't good. I thought that segue was just fine. I thought it was pretty smooth. Anyway.
So, looking at the week that was, as we are doing, it was Jack Eichel's first visit to the Sabres after we know all the drama of being pushed out, traded away. I still think a pretty mutually beneficial trade to both sides. But this was his healthy homecoming because he feels like $1 million now. Mm-hmm. He's playing great. And I'm as a fantasy writer, I was like, make sure if you play daily fantasy, you have, I wrote it, it's on record. You have Jack Eichel in your lineup when he's visiting Buffalo.
Yeah.
One hat trick later.
Unbelievable. But you know what? Are we surprised?
No.
I'm not. I
wouldn't predict a hat trick. I thought he'd get a pair. I thought he would get a pair, yes.
I did say last week to you, and this is another admission that I was at fault, because I did say that I thought there would be some sort of love from Buffalo, from the faithful. There would be whatever
you
tribute.
You don't spend enough time
like
in
that.
Buffalo.
No.
I'm telling you that.
I've been to one game in Buffalo, and it's nasty. I should remember that. But
they're loyal to their team. They're not nasty. No. Buffalo fans are very invested.
Yeah.
But they're loyal to their team. And he basically gave them the middle finger, Ryan. Yeah. He left, and he didn't. And it wasn't nice.
Yeah. No.
All right? This wasn't the Claude Giroux. We'll get to that in a minute. That was a different parting of ways. This was a big mutual middle finger on both sides.
Marriage never worked in Buffalo.
It never worked for a couple years, but it was always felt. He's a spicy character.
Yeah.
And I think, and I have no problem with this, I want more players like this in the game. You don't have to have dinner with a guy. You don't have to like him as a human being. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with him at all. I don't know Jack Eichel. Maybe he's lovely. But he brings a bit of spice and character. And when he saluted the crowd after scoring the third goal, it's an empty netter as well, which is just like...
Oh, from his own end. Right? From his own end.
He took the pass too, so it was great. And it's just sticking it to them. Yeah. And then that's great for the sport. And now they're going to, when they play each other moving forward, it's going to be fun. It's going to be must-watch TV if you can't be there in person. And that's this is entertainment. Sports is entertainment. It's a diversion. It's fantastic.
And it's not a rivalry between Buffalo and Vegas. It's only to see Jack back in Buffalo.
And Buffalo fans. That's the rivalry. That's
it. So people are making, is this kind of the joke rivalry now in the NHL?
They only play each other twice every season. It's like, and in the playoffs, they would only meet up in the Stanley Cup final, which isn't going to happen this year for certain.
There was a moment, I know tons of pictures were taken that night and stills, but there was after his first goal he scored, it was when he went behind the net after he scored and he just kind of looked up to the crowd.
Amazing.
And there were these three or four guys, maybe early mid-20s, something like that, maybe late teens, I don't know. All Buffalo fans, front row, on the glass.
In the crowd.
And their faces are just deadpanned on him. Right. No expression, you know, no fingers up, no nothing, just, really? Crap. He just did that. And they probably knew he's going to do it again. Now, to your point, two goals, maybe three. Didn't know about that, but good for him.
Oh, it's totally good. And also, he looks incredible this year.
He does.
So it's not like he has been sleeping and then he came out for one game only. He has been great all season. That line is fantastic.
Stone and Stevenson. Oh my gosh. Like top line of hockey? Maybe? Possibly?
Top
close
three,
to it?
Top three? 100%.
Yeah.
Top three? 100%.
Speaking of homecomings,
this one was nicer.
Claude Giroux.
It was a little softer, a little bit more cuddly.
It was a lot nicer. They played two, I think, the week before, close to that. And I believe Ottawa lost. And I think there was the shot on the bench of him after it was a close game. They almost came back and they lost. And he looked devastated. He looked, you know, very, because it meant something to him.
Of course.
Not just to beat Philly, even though I know it was in Ottawa, but this one was different because he came back to Philly.
He came back to Philly. So he's going back. So Claude Giroux is going back to the place that he played for years and years and years. The only place he ever played for in the NHL. And I we were joking about this last week. Is he going to walk into the wrong dressing room? Is like, is he going to park in like the, not the visitors parking lot? I'm sure these things are all sorted out, but you know what I mean? These are his halls. And this was his first visit back and he did contribute. And this Ottawa Senators did win the game. And the tribute video was really quite great. It was nothing you could not applaud at the end. But again, that was a nicer parting of ways. That was a parting of ways that made sense for the Flyers at the time too. So there isn't any nastiness there. It's not like, you know, Flyers fans are their own brand, and they don't have any hatred for Claude Giroux whatsoever.
They shouldn't have any hatred for Claude Giroux.
So it's a little bit different. I'm sure they're a little pissy they didn't win the game, but they can still appreciate what he did for them for so many years.
If you hit free agency in any sport, this one, the NHL, it's your right to test the waters. If you want to come back to sign with the team that you had played with before, then you can do that as well.
But he also made a decision to benefit his old team because they got something back instead of just losing him for nothing in the summertime. I never understand why people can be angry about that.
And that's where this breakup is great. It's great. And the respect factor that Philly has for Claude Giroux, who's having a good season, by the way, not too bad. 14 games, 15 points.
Ottawa's got to pull up their socks a little bit, but Giroux's doing just fine.
Quickly before we hit the break, the Devils, I'm stunned. I'm speechless. I don't have many words to describe what this team is doing.
Sorry, Lindy.
Can you? It's like Eichel. I don't know if there's an Eichel comparable to that or something. Maybe not. Maybe there is, but good on the Devils fans. Of course, fans are ruthless. They're going to boo the coach.
So they boo the coach to start the season without just cause, really. Right. So they boo Lindy Ruff. Now the Devils are on a heater.
Because it's always like the coach's fault. It's always the coach's fault.
They're like 9-1. If they're scoring goals too, they're not winning 1-0 games. The Devils are scoring goals. So the chant the other night was "Sorry, Lindy," instead of booing. And I loved his response afterwards. He's like, "I accept their apology. Maybe we can all sit down and have a beer at some point."
Talked about it. Which is great. Listen, there's no reason to think that this can't be sustainable. Maybe not this pace.
No. They're going to regress a little bit. They're not going to win 120 games this year.
But playoffs. I'll call it.
The Devils are in the playoffs?
I'll call it.
I'm not so sure. But I will say this. It's because of their goaltending that I'm not so sure. Because right now, their underlying numbers, their analytics on offense support what they're doing. This is not a happy accident. It actually makes sense what they are accomplishing according to the people who crunch this stuff. I'm not one of them. Go read them. Yeah, but I read them, and I can tell you that the underlying numbers do support what the Devils are doing on the ice so far in terms of scoring goals. I'm a little bit worried about whether they're going to continue to stop letting them in on their own end. Akira Schmid. Really? Okay.
Yeah. Incredible run. Good on them. It's been fun. So that's just in part a bit of the week that was in the NHL. We'll take a break. We will come back and we will bring down the clinkhammer.
We're going to bring down the clinkhammer.
Bring down the clinkhammer. And this is where we are constructively critical.
We're just slamming people, Ryan. We are slamming people.
See, now we're coming out. The different personalities between us are now coming out on this podcast. We'll be back.
Constructively.
Huxley 7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
This is Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter, RyanPayton75, at Victoria Matiash. We're available on a lot of different platforms, wherever you get your podcasts, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio. The list goes on and on and on. Coming up in the next segment, we'll look ahead to the week to come in the NHL. And, of course, Vic's going to talk about the fantasy side of things, as she does so well with ESPN.com. But now, though, once again, without further ado,
time now to drop the clink hammer.
Since you described it so well last week, do you want to describe it again as to what this exactly is?
Well, we're basically asking some serious questions of individuals and organizations and different people that are involved in the NHL, why they are making some decisions or acting the way they are. And we're taking a critical view of it. Let's put it that way. We're not slamming them. Well, we are in some cases. But in others, we're wondering why.
Okay.
We're wondering why they're taking the approach that they're taking. So the first off, we're wondering why Sheldon Keefe, couldn't start Keith Petruzzelli in the second of a back-to-back set over the weekend when Shalgren played on Friday night, and it was, the stage was perfectly set for this young guy to make his debut. He's so excited, just signed his first NHL contract. Shalgren was okay on the Friday, but you don't want him to be tired. He ended up winning, to be fair. So, I mean, in retrospect, it looks like a decent decision, but...
Yeah, I have no issue with somebody playing back-to-back. I've had an issue with goalies playing back-to-back. I think they get babied too much. I really do. There's no, if you want to play Friday, if you want to play Saturday, if you're the number one, I'm not just talking about Toronto, all 31 other teams. If you want to go back to back and you feel fine, then do it. You don't, there's no rule that says you have to start your starter and then you have to do the backup. In
you're not
one,
a big load management guy.
Don't even get me going with load management. I'm not taking away from what they do. I'm not taking away from how tough it is. I totally get that. But they're able to go back to back, especially with this one. There was no traveling involved. You played Pittsburgh Friday. You played Vancouver on Saturday, both in Toronto.
But I wanted to see Petruzzelli play.
Right. That's where I'm getting to. So Sheldon Keefe, and I know he did a classy gesture. He started all Swedes on the opening faceoff.
Oh, because Salming was in the house.
Yeah. Right? So here's the thing. If I was Sheldon Keefe, Petruzzelli, I would have started him on Saturday. You mentioned it. Signs the contract. Excited. We've seen the video. Can't wait to start Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, at home against not a very good hockey team in Vancouver. Now,
Toronto. His numbers are great.
His numbers are great.
With the AHL. Yeah. So give the boy a shot. And what was so interesting, on the opposite end, Bruce Boudreau's Vancouver Canucks, who do they start?
Yeah.
Spencer Martin.
Exactly.
Where does Spencer Martin live, or where did he grow up? Wow. Oakville, in the greater Toronto area. So he got to play in front of family and friends and all of his entourage, and he didn't win the game, but I'm sure it was a very special night for him anyways. And it would have been nice to see the Toronto Maple Leafs do the same thing. I know the job of, listen, I know the job of hockey teams and coaches is to win games. I get that. And you want to do whatever is necessary to win the game. I, from my point of view, this still gave them a very good opportunity to win that game against a struggling Canucks team.
I think it would have given them even more of a chance to win. Now, if they lost that game, then the discussion more would have been maybe they shouldn't have started Shalgren. But to your point, they did win. They didn't start off well. They found a way to win. They came back, got the 2 points, end of story. And if his whole thing was, I want to start the five Swedes and then the goalie, six Swedes on the ice in response to Borja Salmi to show him all that stuff, fine then. Take Shalgren off. Talk to him before. You're going to start because this is what I want to do to show respect for Borja Salmi. Take him off. Put Petruzzelli in. I just think there's no reason why you can't start somebody like that. And it's not this, oh, you've got to be a nice coach. Oh, you have to do the things that not right for the team, but do something right for Petruzzelli. To your point as well, he has put up some really good numbers. Give him a shot. If he stinks, if he just stinks the joint out, then pull him. That's fine. But now, Samsonov's going to come back probably sooner than expected. Matt Murray's healing.
And he's not going to get the opportunity.
He's not going to get a chance, Vic.
It's a bummer.
It ticks me off.
And it's a bummer.
And he's not going to be coming out to the media to say all this stuff. But deep inside... Come on.
He's going to be super bummed.
Come on, Sheldon Keefe.
And this might have been his greatest opportunity, but we're not nearly bringing down the clink hammer as hard on Sheldon Keefe as we are on Jim Rutherford. All right. This situation with the Vancouver Canucks is really boiling my bananas at this point. So basically, they're not playing well. No. They have 4 wins, I believe, and they are struggling, and they do not look great whatsoever.
4-9-3.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
From the get-go, Jim Rutherford has been slamming the habits of the team, how they looked in training camp publicly, like to the media. We're all hearing this, and he hasn't taken his foot off the gas pedal at all. And all he talks, oh, we're a talented team. We do have the pieces in place, but just their poor habits. And I didn't like how they look doing this, and they're disorganized. And that always comes down. That comes down to the coaching. He is slamming Bruce Boudreau. He's not saying it specifically, I don't like what the coach is doing, but he is saying that, and he's saying it every week now. So the team is in disarray. What do they expect? Are they waiting for their coach to be fired every single day? Because I would be, if I was skating, if I was Bo Horvat or Pedersen, I would be waiting for my coach to be fired every single day. Bruce Boudreau, I mean, I know he's a pretty cool collected cucumber, but he's got to be a nervous wreck at this point. And it just feels broken. It feels completely broken. So Rutherford, please, either fire the guy, hire your own. I know he wasn't your guy. Do it. Drop the second shoe. Bring in who you want, Or you come out and you go, no, Bruce is our guy and we're going to continue on in this vein and that's what we're going to do. But do one or the other. Stop talking out of one side of your face and not taking any action. I cannot stand that. It's not fair to the players. It's not fair to the fans.
This is an ugly situation in Vancouver. And I think the biggest point, and you mentioned it, was that this started when Jim began to discuss about how training camp was and how they were not ready. So right then there was the problem. I saw some stats too. Under Bruce, when Travis Green was let go, the team went 32-15-10. Very respectable. Nothing wrong with that.
They like playing for him.
But now they're on pace to do worse. If, say, Travis Green was there last year and the pace continued to be under him.
So that's the issue.
If
that's what you need to do, then you do it. But do it then.
And Bo Horvat, he has a contract coming up.
Yeah.
He has a contract coming up. And I think on the telecast or something I was reading recently where it was the Canucks also saying, you know, a lot of this is going to come down to if we play well. If we don't, we know he's going to walk. So all these things are put in place mentally to every single one on the team.
It smells really bad.
It smells awful. It smells awful. It really does. I'm with you.
Just pick. You're going to be paying because they're still paying Travis Green. You're going to be paying Travis Green. You're going to be paying Bruce Boudreau. You're going to be paying a new coach, whoever your guy is. Jim Rutherford wants to bring in his guy. That's clear. Yeah. Then you're going to do that. Then do it. But stop talking to the media about and basically slamming your coach in different language.
Yeah.
Without actually making any changes.
Well, there's no relationship between, well, there is. It's not a very good one.
You think they're having lunch together right now?
No, that divorce
is not a fun lunch.
No, you got to have that divorce soon. I have no time, Vic, for a slew foot. I have no time for that
Blake Coleman.
The National Hockey League. I really don't. I think it's a disgusting play. PK Subban, it's glad that he's retired. He signed that contract too. Good for him. But he did quite a bit of that over his time. It's cheap. It's cheap.
It's also dangerous.
There's cheap plays that happen in hockey. It's incredibly dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous. And you know what you're doing. Now, I played hockey a lot. I don't think I've ever seen visually in front of me something like that happen. Is the mindset going into something like that, I know what I'm about to do, here's what I'm going to do. Or, because something like that to me, my point is, I don't think it can be spontaneous. I just think...
Oh, you think you have to think?
No.
So basically, we're summarizing. Blake Coleman was fined $5,000 for committing. He's not suspended for committing a slew foot, playing for Calgary over the weekend. A very deserved fine. It's a dangerous play. And you're asking if you think that it is thought through. Like, is it premeditated, basically?
I don't know.
First degree murder versus...
hold on. It's a slew foot.
Okay, no, you know what I mean. But premeditated.
Yeah, I do. But my point is, I think what happens is when you get in that specific spot, when the next action is to slew foot, is to do that, pull the body down, put your leg this way, then I think right at that, I think players have a choice. I really do. I don't think players have a ton of choice.
All right. I get it. You say there's several motions involved in it.
There is motions involved.
It's not an elbow in the head.
No. And if I'm going to compare it to, and is this a right comparison? I don't know, but I'm just thinking about this off the top of my head. If I'm going to compare it to somebody in the corner, say you're going in the corner, I'm coming at you full steam. Your side's toward me. I can see you. I don't see your numbers. You're fine. My job is to get the puck and to get you off the puck and to ride you into the boards.
That's the game.
Last second, last millisecond, you turn.
And it's my numbers.
It's really tough to stop on a dime. Yeah. I know these guys are good, but when you're, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, it's really tough. I think with this, when you get into that motion, you can stop if you want to, because God forbid we see something like this happen, and I'm sure we have before injuries have become of it, that leg could completely snap. And someone's career could be done. I know I'm going a lot into this, but anyway, I have no time for that.
So you're not happy with the fine? Would you like to see a suspension? Yes. You get fined the max.
I absolutely do.
Two games?
I would say three.
Wow, for a slew foot.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're harsh.
Don't even get me going. This is the most harsh clinkhammer segment we've had. Anyway.
Me and the Flames are, by the way, 3-5-2 in their last 10. And they're dwindling in the lower half of the Pacific Division. And they better get their act together soon. And Blake Coleman slew-footing people isn't going to help in that regard.
No, it's not.
Although they did win that game. Not because of that.
Just a game.
Taking a deep breath there?
I am.
Okay, so we're going to bring down the hammer one more time.
Yeah, that actually got me going. Yeah. Last one. So the Michigan, the goal,
we're just going to call it the Zegras now.
Okay.
So Zegras with Anaheim scored another one of his lacrosse style goals.
And I love it.
It's amazing. It's entertaining. It's so fun. And it was very exciting, as they usually are. We love watching them. You don't even have to be an Anaheim Ducks fan to appreciate this whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then they took a moment and they reviewed it and they called one of the defensemen offside. And he was.
He was.
And he was. And it completely took the air out of the balloon and it really put a damper on all the fun of that goal. And so we're very mildly bringing the clink hammer down.
Yeah.
On the review system.
It's just a tap. No?
I was going to say tickle, and that's just a disgusting word, so I'm going to drop it.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's a light tap. It's a light tap on the review system that the NHL is employing, the video review, which is you want to get it right. And here's what I'm going to say about this. I don't have a solution here.
No.
So, I mean, when we address Jim Rutherford and the Canucks and Sheldon Keefe and his fourth string goalie, we can offer some solutions. I don't know what to do here, because you want the league to get the call right. And that they have to, and it's such a fast game. The refs on the ice can't make the right call all the time. And I respect that.
Right.
It is fast. They're not watching it on TV like we are. They're on ice. Mm-hmm. So then they have the opportunity to review it. But when it's taking 4 or 5, sometimes even more minutes for them to figure out, it kills.
Takes the air out of the balloon.
It kills it. Yeah. The momentum's gone. The momentum of fun is completely sucked out of the competition. Yeah. It's not fun to watch, but I don't know what to suggest, because you want them to get the call right.
I don't know what you can suggest, because they've been trying to get not just that call right, but calls right in general with hockey, and they have put more eyes in the sky. There's different angles. Years ago, there was three cameras maybe, and I know I'm going back decades, but there wasn't a lot of replay angles that you can see right.
And it is definitely qualifies as improvements to the game. We don't want to see a Stanley Cup won again by a goal that shouldn't have counted.
No. So to your point, I'm with you. I don't know how you can address this, but they will, from what I gather, which is a good thing to do. But there, and then there's a point too, and then we'll stop with this. There's a point at how much tweaking do you need to do? How much tweaking does one sport have to do in order to get it correct? I understand you want it right, but I also understand
you don't
want to
mess with
sport,
it every single year. Like we're bringing this in, we're
any
bringing
sport,
that in.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm with
in
you.
In any sport, you can't take the human element completely out of the game. You can't. You try to in the NHL, you really do, because now the refs have eyes in Toronto, the war room.
You probably love umpires in baseball, right?
I do. If they go robotic, I'm done with baseball. I'm telling you, I'm done. Because it's been part of the game. It's part of it. And I don't envy these officials. It's tough. If you make the right call, the crowd loves you. If you don't, they hate you forever. And then so I get that. But this is discussed so many times and so often at all these meetings. And I know that they've made progress. I get it. Where did they go from here? I don't know. We dropped the clink hammer.
We did. We certainly did.
Yeah, we certainly did. We're going to take a break. Breather. Get some air. We'll come back and we'll go through the week to come, and also Vic's Fantasy, a segment as well. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matthews.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matthews.
Is this Pucks and Seven? We're now going to look at the week football. That is Ryan. I am Victoria. Ryan Payton, Victoria Matthews.
Don't forget about
me. Please specify that.
Don't forget about us.
And this is Pucks and Seven, where we look at the week that was, some other things, and then, of course, we like to wrap up with the week to come, the matchups to look forward to that are on the slate in over the next 7 days, and why we're looking at those in particular. And I think, first of all, Monday night, the St. Louis Blues and their one-game winning streak.
Hey, it's something. It's two. It's two.
Have they won two in a row?
They won two in a row.
All right.
They won late last week, and then they took on Vegas because they went to Vegas.
That was a surprising one.
On Saturday.
They have won two in a row, you're right.
And they beat Vegas. I remember we had Chris Kerber on, the Blues play-by-play guy on the show, and I said, so Chris, great that you got the monkey off your back with the Blues getting the win. And I said, too bad you have to go to Vegas now. And then at the end of it, I remember him saying, if they can somehow find a way to get a win against Vegas, this is the thing that this team needs, because they have been completely underperforming.
It's a huge boost.
Ryan O'Reilly has been underperforming. There's this, his contract's up at the end of the season. There's even discussion last week or two. Oh, if the Blues are still in this spot at the deadline, are they going to try to trade him? Because that would be a perfect rental for somebody, because he's not under contract.
Who
with
doesn't
anybody
want
next
that
season.
Guy on your team for a playoff
right.
push?
Time. But if the Blues can do this, they've already taken a whole bunch of steps back. So this is big for me. And Colorado, same thing. Avs, is it a Stanley Cup hangover? No. Different lineup, different team. They're missing some. They miss
no Landeskog. That's the big one,
right? And they also have some injuries to key players.
That's a Landeskog is the injury. I mean, they're missing Kadri's not coming back.
Chuskin's out.
That's right. Gerard's out.
Right. So they're missing a bunch of guys, and they're going to be back soon. Well, some of them maybe two or three, but Chuskin's out for a while. So this is a big one too. If you can somehow just keep the ship afloat, if you will,
and they are winning games,
and they're doing it. So
Logan O'Connor, man, come on, little credit to Logan.
And you know what? You know the Blues too. They're going into this one thinking we've won two. Now, for some teams, a lot of teams, that's nothing. But for them, it's good. Coming off Vegas, now they take on Colorado, injured Stanley Cup champions. They're going to be ready to go. So that's a key game for me.
And a little tip of the cap to Jordan Binnington, who we actually put through the ringer last week.
Did.
Because
we
he
did.
Was he was stinking large. And he actually, he pitched a gem on Saturday.
Yeah.
It was, I think he let in a shorthanded goal and an even strength goal, but he came away with the win against a very strong Vegas team. So kudos to him.
Bowen Byram too hurt as well for the Avalanche. So
they are pretty
dealing,
banged
right?
up.
They've been pretty banged up with that. You wanted to quickly Minnesota Nashville quickly. Then we can
so
talk
Tuesday Philly. Moving on to Tuesday. So that's Monday night's with our key game in our view on Tuesday. Minnesota to Nashville. I can't figure either one of these teams out. I watch hockey every night. I write about it 5 days a week. Yeah. I read about it. I don't know what's going on there. These are two teams that are playing 500 hockey or even worse than 500 hockey in the case of Nashville.
Yeah. Are you mean consistency? You don't know why they can't get on a run.
They have the personnel on the ice from the net out.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, both teams.
Whether it's Saros in one side or whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury on the other. And then they'll play a game and they'll Marc-Andre Fleury had a shutout the other day and they look spectacular.
Right.
Defensively at least. And then they'll have another game and they'll score some goals. And then they look like what they're, in my mind, what they're supposed to look like with the people they have in place. Mm-hmm. And then they'll lose and they'll lose a game they shouldn't lose. And then they'll lose a second game that this goes for both teams. They're playing 500 or sub 500 hockey and they are not 500 or sub 500 teams in my view, not with the pieces they have in place. So I want to see the two of them play each other and try to get a greater sense of not what's going right, but what's going wrong and how it can be fixed.
Nashville's having trouble scoring.
I remember
you and I talked about UC Saros a few weeks ago on this podcast, and we said what's wrong with him. His numbers are not good. They weren't as good as what everybody expects them to be, but is that part in part because the team hasn't been scoring in front of him? Maybe. But Nashville's 28th in the league out of 32 teams. In goals scored.
It's unacceptable.
28th in the league out of 32. Minnesota's at 24. So they're not too, they only have two more goals than Nashville does, but they're placed a little bit different because there's a few teams in
and
between
Saros,
them.
Saros played
and
New York Rangers the other day and they won and he was spectacular. That's what I mean. I can't get my head around it. Yeah. What's going on with either one of those teams.
So each night you're wondering what team you're going to get.
That's exactly
That's
right.
pretty much what it is. And it shouldn't be. A lot of teams in the NHL, you can put them in that category. Nashville shouldn't. More like 75%, 80% of the time, you will have an idea you should with Nashville on how that team's going to be.
People
but that's
had
not
them
the
winning the Central.
I know. Did I? No, I don't think I did. Maybe.
I may have.
So not people, but I, as she's looking.
I'm people.
I know. Philly, Columbus, I just had it down.
It's only fun because Tortorella, they were right there. Tortorella and his Philadelphia Flyers visited last week, lost.
Yeah.
It bugged him. You could tell when the reporter asked asked a particular question and he responded with, "That's none of your business," which I mean, a reporter's asking a question. You're a professional hockey coach in the NHL. Of course, it's our business. It was their business to ask and it's your business to answer. And I'm sorry you're in a bad mood. But so I want to see, this is a bit of a revenge game for Torts, who I like. And to see him come back and hopefully for Flyers fans, hopefully make amends for the 5-2 loss last week. I think that's going to be top of everybody's minds.
Chuck Fletcher said, I think during his career that he's almost always talked to the media after every game. I don't think it will be an issue moving forward because he sent Brad Shaw to speak after the loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Torts, just deal with it. Honestly, just deal with it. It is what it is. Anyway, LA Edmonton, we bring it up on Wednesday. Big thing is Evander Kane. First of all,
huge loss.
Glad that he did not. Glad it wasn't worse than it. No, you're fine. Okay. Glad it wasn't worse than it. Than it.
You don't want to see anybody injured.
Could have been. Yeah. So 3 to 4 months.
Not a huge Kane fan.
I know.
You don't want to see anybody injured under any circumstances. But he scores.
Yeah. His ex-wife wasn't.
Oh boy.
Displeased about.
Anyway, he lives life a certain way, and I don't necessarily love it.
No. Fair enough. But the injury caused now Edmonton to think, okay, who is going to come up and. Not come up, but who's going to step in and take his place?
And they tried Warren Fogle the other day, and it actually
is that
worked.
The answer?
It worked okay. No, that's not the answer.
Is that the 3-4 month answer?
No, I don't believe so. But I don't know.
What about Jesse Puljujärvi?
Okay, I mean they have him up on the other top six
he's
line
been
right
so
now.
Odd to me since he's been in the league. I want him to break out. I really do consistently, but I don't get it.
The team.
He's a puzzle.
People really like him. They're like he's the nicest guy. Yeah. So you are rooting for him. It's much easier to root for people who are pleasant than those who are not. And he does have all the tools in place. And he was, I believe, drafted in his draft a year third overall, I believe.
I think.
I believe. Anyways, high.
Yeah.
And he's always been the perennial disappointment. And he left and he came back and you thought, okay, that's going to fix the problem. And he's going to give it another go with Edmonton. And it's all sorted out. And it wasn't. And last season, he got off to a banger of a start. He was amazing to start. First month last year was great.
Yeah.
And then he became what we were accustomed to watching before. So I like to always see him get a go in that top six, whether it's with Draisaitl, whether it's with Connor McDavid. So we'll have to see how that all works out, but he's just not consistent at all.
No. Drafted fourth, Pierre-Luc Dubois, third in that one, PLD. Dylan Holloway, another example.
Again.
Yamamoto, maybe another one. I'm just throwing names. We don't have to spend tons of time on it, but I'm just throwing names out. That
I don't think Dylan Holloway is the answer either.
Well, this is going to be for Edmonton, kind of something by committee. You know, it's going to be one maybe one night, one the next, whatever it is. Because Edmonton and Calgary, they have
How
not
do you
been...
develop chemistry when you do that, though?
I don't know. You don't. I was never good at it.
But they're not going to replace Kane. No, there's very few players in this league that score goals like he does.
No,
so
know.
They're not going to replace him.
Calgary-Tampa.
Well, I mean, that's just fun because watching the Flames right now is interesting.
Yes.
I don't understand why they're playing as poorly as they are. And that Florida trip against the Tampa Bay Lightning and then in Florida, which I mean, there's a relationship there with everything that all the transactions that happened over the summer.
Yeah.
So that's going to be curious as well. So Calgary has a couple of big ones coming up. And before Daryl Sutter actually explodes in front of our own eyes, they need to start winning some hockey games.
Yeah, but don't we want to see Daryl explode?
Half of me does. But they're underperforming right now.
Now, they
played well over the weekend, and that might hopefully is going to be the start of something.
Everyone,
but from goal out, they haven't been who they should be.
Everyone's waiting for Calgary just to go, and this is going to be a pun.
And they probably will.
Go on a heater, right?
And they probably will.
Yeah.
So, but it's been an interesting couple of weeks for them. So the Florida trip is going to be an interesting one.
It's going to be big. Seattle Kraken, last one too. We had on Saturday the LA Kings. Even though the time we do in this podcast, the Jets beat Seattle in overtime, all that type of stuff, doesn't matter. I love Seattle. I'm a huge fan of Seattle. As long as they keep being Seattle, go on them, do it. I'm never going to drop the Clint camera on you, by the way. That's our last game. You want to talk?
They've lost a couple in a row, but they didn't lose them poorly. No. So we'll see if they get back on track.
Do you know that they went on a stretch before, I think, one game last week where they had scored at least 3-10 straight games? 10 straight games, Seattle, the Seattle Kraken.
They're an offensive powerhouse, Ryan.
At least three or more.
They're an offensive powerhouse.
Right.
Didn't you know?
No. Go to fantasy. Go to fantasy.
You know what? This is an awesome segue. I'm going to five players I'm looking at right now who are underappreciated in ESPN.com fantasy leagues. And so that means they're going to be underappreciated everywhere else, whether you like daily fantasy or you play elsewhere.
Right.
Let's start with Seattle. Martin Jones.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not diving in head first without even checking what's at the bottom of the pool here, okay?
Good.
I'm still, there's a little trepidation with endorsing the goaltender for the Seattle Kraken, especially one who has not necessarily enjoyed that much success before in the NHL.
No.
But he's playing well.
There's a lot of people that share that sentiment.
But he's playing
Martin
well.
Martin Jones, they'll say, but this.
But he's playing well, though. So I would say if you're in a situation where you can stream or you have the bench spots and you can maybe like work it out, you're not going to give up a top-tier goaltender and bring in Martin Jones instead. But if you have flexibility on your roster or if you do play daily fantasy, this is somebody to look at for the foreseeable future until it doesn't work. Right? It works until it doesn't. And he may continue to be that guy. Every year we get that guy or a couple of those that guys. And he may be that at least the first half of the season. We'll have to see.
The overall numbers on a second year team in the NHL for Martin Jones, 12 games started, 7-4-0-2, 2.38 goals against, .909 save percentage. There's nothing wrong with that.
The save percentage isn't amazing, but the
on
rest
Seattle,
of it is good.
On Seattle.
Yeah, but fantasy managers don't care where you play.
I know. But I'm just saying, 909. Anyway, go on. Next.
So that's my goaltender that you could probably grab for absolutely nothing. On defense, everybody loves to slam this guy for the way he plays the game defensively. Fantasy managers don't care about how you play defensively. Tyson Barrie is scoring.
Oh.
And he is underappreciated across the board as well. He scores, man. I don't know what you want. Does he block a lot of shots? No.
It doesn't matter.
If that's a huge category in your league, sure, maybe look elsewhere.
Right.
But you've got those guys, you know. But he contributes to the score sheet more often than not.
And when he is on the power play a lot of times.
Oh, he's often on the power. He's on the top
helps.
Unit.
That helps.
And he gets his power play scoring. Yeah. And those are your bonus marks, basically, in fantasy competition.
He had two goals the other night, I think, didn't he?
He did. He's scoring a lot now.
Yeah,
and he's available in about half of ESPN.com leagues, which makes absolutely zero sense to me. Up front, Kirby Dach. He's on the top line with Montreal. He's scoring. He's also a very talented player, so that's not a bad star to hitch your fantasy cart to. Carter Verhaeghe gets absolutely... I had him last week. I don't care. I'm saying it again. He gets no respect in fantasy forums.
Yeah, you did say this last
week. He's amazing. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. He's playing on the top line with the Panthers, and he's just... Every single night, he does something, and he puts up points, and I have no idea why people don't love him. Jason Zucker. With the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm a big Zucker fan, and I have been for a long time in fits and starts. There aren't that many players in fantasy that run as hot and cold as he does, and he's hot right now. He can skate like the wind.
Yep.
The guy is so fast. When he gets it all together, and he's filling a top six role with the Penguins right now, and he is scoring, and he is incredibly underappreciated in fantasy forums. So that's somebody to keep in mind. He is going to drop off. I can almost guarantee it just because that's his resume. He is going to drop off, but until he does, you might as well take advantage of it.
He had a line recently, and I think it was just based on the last week that he's had. And as you say, he'll drop off at some point, but at this point, it's nice. He said that he hated the game. He said, I hated the game last year. It was some sort of quote he had not too long ago. So
he seems to take a lot of things to heart. I've seen him in interviews. Yeah, yeah. And he seems like a pretty emotional guy too. And I think he feels all of it, but he's feeling really good right now.
Yep.
And for fantasy managers, that's something we appreciate. So there's my fantasy five for the for this week.
Broken leg, 2021, core muscle surgery. So the last two, I would hate it too if I was battling injury.
It's a tough game.
That whole time. Yeah, it is. Been a lot of fun. We're back at it again next week for another edition of Pucks and Seven. We'll look at the week that was next Monday and take a look to the week to come. And also Vic's fantasy stuff going to be back, and we will drop the clink hammer again. On behalf of Victoria, I'm Ryan. You can follow us on Twitter at RyanPayton75, at Victoria Matiash. Get us wherever you get your podcasts as well. This has been Pucks in 7.
This has been Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash. Available wherever you get your podcasts.